Chapter 28. Transposed. Returned at last to his old stomping ground, Hass sat quietly with his drink, deciding that even the music sounded good. Rumor had it that he had died at Salient. So on stepping into the wanton wellspring, he received what had amounted to a hero's welcome. Friends and former shipmates insisting on buying him drinks, and his lovely Dresselian dream girl surprising him with a kiss that lingered. Even now, after months of traveling about, he wasn't sure to whom he owed his good fortune. Perhaps the Ursos, or Will of Tarkin. In some ways, Krennic figured into things as well. But probably Tarkin most of all. If Tarkin hadn't been willing to trust that Hass would willingly serve as his spy, he would never have been able to contact Lyra and arrange for Saul to remove them from what Hass perceived as danger born of Tarkin's obvious competition with Orson Krennic. Krennic, however, hadn't simply allowed him to leave Coruscant after their reunion at the spaceport hangar, at least, not immediately. He had kept Hass locked away until the story of his escape from Salient could be substantiated, and Tarkin had been only too happy to oblige, since by then he had come to think of Hass as his inside man. In short order, then, Hass was back in the commander's employ and tasked with hunting down the missing Ursos, progress on which he had furnished to both Krennic and Tarkin, confident that the two would never have cause to compare notes. The Ursos had been identified by cams at a spaceport near the former Bancor refuge, but there was no record of them having passed through security. A thorough study of departing traffic had revealed that a starship had launched shortly after cams had acquired the Ursos' images, but the ship's signature was unknown and no trace of it had been found. The fact that the ship had been ID'd multiple times at Salient by Tarkin's forces had clearly escaped Krennic's notice, probably owing to Tarkin's reluctance to share information of any sort with his rival in the Corps of Engineers, or in whatever branch of the military Krennic was actually enlisted. Several messages had been teased from the Celestial Power Communication Suite, but the most tantalizing of them, those exchanged between Hass and Lyra, had been relayed through so many HoloNet transceivers that the origin sources couldn't be pinpointed. Krennic, however, had focused on Lyra's friend Nari Sable as the person most likely to have helped the Ursos complete their flight. In keeping with the search for the Ursos, Hass had located Nari, but the comely surveyor had been able to provide her Imperial investigators with an alibi and had been released soon after being questioned. So Hass had devoted the next several standard months to following up on leads as to the Ursos' whereabouts, which in fact had meant applying himself diligently to not finding them, even going so far as to avoid having any contact with former Onderanian freedom fighter Saw Gerrera, out of concern that Hass's communications were being secretly monitored by Krennic or Tarkin. Sipping from his drink, Hass wasn't entirely convinced that he had accomplished something worthwhile, but it sure felt that way. More, he was close to being back on his own after years of executing the commands of others, and as free as anyone could be in the ever-expanding empire, despite being unemployed, without a crew, and still having to transmit the odd lack of progress reports to Krennic and Tarkin. Lyra had been right when she told him during their final communication that the Force worked in mysterious ways. Finishing his drink, he stood and walked to the bar, where the Dresselian server who had kissed him was busy trying to chat up a customer. Sidling up alongside her, he said, "What would you say to my taking you away from all this?" Turning immediately from her target, she said, "It's about time, Obit." Her smile said the rest, and with arms linked, the two of them left the wanton wellspring in search of new horizons. Tarkin and a contingent of stormtroopers arrived at Sentinel Base in his personal ship, the Carrion Spike. A wind-scoured gray moon, the base and several others in the vicinity supervised supply shipments bound for Geonosis, where the battle station was still under construction. Some in the Imperial Court wondered why the Emperor had assigned one of his top moffs to control space traffic. But Tarkin wasn't there to safeguard the battle station so much as to keep an eye on Orson Krennic, who, despite recent obstacles, remained in charge of the Special Weapons Group. Wind-driven grit assaulted the cockpit viewports as Tarkin brought the ship down on the base's target-like landing field. As inhospitable as Sentinel was, the moon was preferable to the western reaches. Adjusting to a downside life after so many years spent aboard Star Destroyers would be the difficult part of the assignment. But gazing out on the complex of interconnected domes and hangars, Tarkin knew that he could endure a standard year or two there, if it meant furthering his goals. Hass Obit was still reporting to him on what he could glean of Krennic's activities, and of course, on the seemingly futile hunt for Galen Erso and his family. When the truth had emerged that Erso's research into kyber crystals had been weaponized without his knowledge, Tarkin wasn't surprised. Nor did he feel any real sympathy for the situation in which the scientist had placed himself. The need to serve the Empire superseded personal goals, and sometimes personal morals also. More to the point, Erso should have seen through Krennic the way Tarkin had. That Erso's disappearance would delay completion of the battle station superlaser was certainly regrettable, and would have to be remedied immediately. But not the fact that Krennic had been somewhat crippled by the scientist's unexpected departure. The headstrong and impulsive commander had been gaining too much prestige and influence with Vizier Masamita and other advisors, and Tarkin was gratified to see him taken down a notch. Fortunately, the Emperor agreed. Tarkin wasn't certain that Krennic's team of researchers and engineers would find a way to equip the battle station with a suitable weapon on their own, but that wasn't his concern at the moment. He would execute his new role and bide his time. Having succeeded in the Western Reaches and at Salient, he was a step closer to assuming command of the entire project. "I refuse to accept a demotion to Lieutenant Commander," Krennic told Amita in no uncertain terms. The pair were in the Vizier's temporary office in one of the original spires of the Jedi Temple, which was undergoing extensive renovations designed to transform it into the seat of the Imperial Court, complete with auditoriums, conference centers, and private landing fields. It was precisely the sort of project Krennic would have been supervising were it not for the battle station. And during the long walk to Amita's headquarters, he had recognized many of the current crew chiefs and foremen.
"It is hardly within your purview to reject a reduction in rank," the Shagrian told him.
Dressed in a white uniform that included a cap, capelet, and black gloves, Krennic was moving through the room like a storm. Few involved in the project are aware that the Ursos had disappeared. "Therefore, a demotion will be interpreted as my having committed some sort of blunder, which is an outright fabrication. I was Erso's handler, not his keeper."
Amita considered it.
"Have you been able to learn anything?"
"Only that the entire family managed to slip out under our very noses, and that there has been no sign of them since."
Amita's lethorn stirred.
"What will you do without Galen?"
Krennic came to a sudden stop. His mouth was open, but no words emerged. Then he managed to say,
"He's not the Empire's only genius crystallographer."
That contradicts what you were telling me 4 years ago.
Erso didn't tamper with any of the research data. Professor Sahali and Dr. Gubacher are confident that they can take up where he left off.
At least they are still with us,
Amida said, fixing Krennic in his gaze.
Trust me, Vizier.
We have, and perhaps beyond your abilities. There are some who think you should be here, in this building, supervising the renovations.
Krennic didn't believe it for a moment, and decided not to dignify the remark with a response.
An overseer is certainly an order,
Amida added. Krennic snorted. Is that why Tarkin has been assigned command of the Sentinel bases? Amida spread his large hands.
He is merely there to safeguard against further setbacks. It pleases the Emperor to keep him close to you.
That's Tarkin's job, to monitor me.
Not entirely, but should the need arise.
It won't.
Then the Emperor will be even more pleased.
Amida paused, then said,
Finish what you started, Commander.
Krennic marched from Amida's office with 4 stormtroopers falling into formation behind him. A shudder went through him as he passed teams of droids at work in the wide, colonnaded hallway. He could hope that Amida had been persuaded to accept that the Special Weapons Group was picking up the slack. The fact was that work on the superlaser was stalled, and Galen's insights were needed more than ever.
After all he had done for Galen, fame would have come to him, grandeur, legacy.
Without his science, Galen was a non-entity. And Lyra. Flushed with anger, he peeled his gloves off as he walked and threw them violently to the polished floor.
He would leave no stone unturned in the search for them.
Jin stared out the front window of Saw Gerrera's spaceship. There were too many lights to count, but she knew that some of them were balls of fire, stars, and that others had houses and buildings, inhabitants, planets. Which one?
It's too far away to see,
Saw said. But we can go there?
If your mom and dad want to.
Through hooperspace.
He smiled at her.
Hyperspace.
She corrected herself.
Hyperspace.
Should we go tell them what we found?
You can tell them.
She unfastened the restraints and put her boots on the deck. When Saw stood up from his seat, she reached out to take his hand, her small pink one and his big brown one, and they walked out of the cockpit together.
Mama and Papa were standing by a window in the large cabin. Mama's arm was around Papa's waist, and his arm was around her waist. They smiled when they looked at her and Saw, and Papa bent down, opening his arms to her.
Come here, Stardust, he said.
She hurried to him and he picked her up, so that she was almost as tall as he was, but not as tall as Saw was.
I think I found the perfect place,
Saw told her parents.
Remote? A bit desolate, but tranquil.
He nodded his chin toward Jin.
Plenty of room for this one to run around.
He pulled his datapad from his pant pocket and showed them the image of a green, black, and blue planet with a wide ring.
It's called Lamu.
Papa looked at the image and said,
It looks unspoiled.
It's getting harder and harder to find worlds the Empire hasn't swept into its grasp,
Saw said.
More and more star systems are knuckling under. More and more planets are being ravaged and sucked dry for resources. Lamu is one of the exceptions.
Papa carried her away from the window.
What do you think, Stardust? Should Lamu be our new home?
Can Saw come and live with us?
Papa looked at Saw and smiled.
Saw is a very busy pilot, but I'm sure he'll visit us. Right, Saw? Saw nodded and made his eyes smile. Someone needs to keep an eye on you three.
He looked at Papa.
I applaud you, Galen. I applaud all of you for taking a stand. You're my heroes. It's people like you who continue to inspire me to play a part in exposing the Empire's machinations.
He considered for a moment, now looking down at Jin.
Not everyone understands the sacrifices necessary to stop them. If we don't use every opportunity, every secret, every weapon available to stop them, how can we face our children? How can we hand them a future filled with such injustice?
Saw turned to Mama and handed her a flat metallic card like the ones Papa used in his work.
In the meantime, take this comm card. It will allow you to contact me if you ever need my assistance.
Jin thought about her old bedroom on Coruscant.
I miss MacVie, Mama.
Mama stretched out her hand to move the hair from her face.
I miss him too, sweetheart. Maybe we can get a new MacVie.
Jin nodded, still thinking about the old MacVie. Mama looked at Papa without smiling.
I guess we're just not cut out to be nomads after all, she said.
Papa nodded. He also wasn't smiling.
Funny to hear you say that. But we're a team. We'll get through this.
No regrets?
Mama asked. Papa said,
none.
Jin watched them and listened. She didn't know what the Empire was or who the Empire was, but Mama and Papa and Saw didn't like it. In some way, the Empire had made them leave behind all her toys and Mama's and Papa's clothes and other things. Aunt MacVie, too, who would have nothing to do without them there. But she felt warm and safe in Papa's arms. And Saw was a new friend. Mama and Papa were good, and so was Saw. And so was she. Good like Bryn in the Octave Stairway.
If they tried hard enough, maybe they could find the home they were looking for.
Saw went back to the cockpit, and Mama and Papa and she stood at the window. Soon after, the lights in space shifted slightly, then turned to long lines, and Saw's ship jumped and disappeared into swirling gray hyperspace.